The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
From Studio 7, I'm your host, Alex Parnuk. Regardless of how you're listening, we're glad to have you joining us. When you have a few minutes, take time to browse around our media website, www.theflypod.com. We have a nationwide network of show hosts, and we podcast a wide variety of programs daily to thousands of small communities across the United States, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. When it comes to media, we are what's next. My guest today is K. Carl Smith. He calls himself a political agitator. I would say activist, but we'll let him go with the agitator. He is deeply involved in an organization called the Frederick Douglass Republicans. And I think this is going to be one of the best interviews I've had because of the very fact that it is a unique subject. K. Carl, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show and to share this message that God has given me.
Usually when I interview people and I don't know that much about them, I kind of let them take a couple of minutes just to give themselves a brief bio as far as your background and how it is that you got started in this.
Well, a little bit about me. I'm a former U.S. Army officer, former motivational speaker, turned political agitator. I'm the founder and president of Frederick Douglass Republicans. I use it interchangeably with Frederick Douglass Liberty Messengers. So it's a two-phrase calling to what we do, the name of our organization. And like many people, 3 or 4 years ago, I was content with living my life, but I got tired of looking at the TV and shouting at the television, and I realized that my country that I love so much is heading toward becoming a European socialist nation, that I realized I had to get involved in politics. I had to get off the couch, stop screaming at the television, get involved in politics to affect change. In my case, not necessarily to run for office, but to help make sure that the values that I believe in, which are conservative values, are represented by our politicians who are supposed to be representing us.
Okay, Carl, first of all, before I say anything else, I want to say thank you for your service. I'm a vet also.
Well, thank you for your service.
Mutual Admiration Society we've got going here. Let's start right in. You know, first of all, when you got involved with the Frederick Douglass program and started really researching Frederick Douglass, was there one seminal moment that for some reason told you, well, this is the fellow I need to concentrate? We've had lots of other black men that have been germane in the black movement. I mean, one just right away thinks of Martin Luther King. But Frederick Douglass is kind of, having read about him, he's a unique person. How was it that you picked this particular individual?
Well, got to first understand that I grew up in a Democrat household. You know, when I was born, I knew I was born black. I thought I was born a Democrat. And one day, a friend of mine sent me a quote from Frederick Douglass where he said on one occasion, "I am a black, die-in-the-wool Republican, and I never intend to belong to any party than the Party of Freedom and Progress." And my curiosity started spinning because why did Frederick Douglass say Freedom and Progress Republican Party and not Freedom and Progress Democrat Party? And that caused me to study the life of Douglass and start reading his writings, because you know, Douglass owned two newspaper companies, so he wrote like over 3,000 or 4,000 editorials or essays. So that's what started my quest to understand more and why Frederick Douglass said the things he did.
Frederick Douglass had quite a unique life. I mean, thinking of coming from slavery, being taken away from his mom and dad. I think he was his dad he never met, and his mother he was taken from.
Well, his dad, it was rumored that his father was his slave master. So Douglass was a mixed race. And you're right, he was immediately taken from his mother at birth because his mother worked and lived on a plantation that was 12 miles from where Douglass was being brought up as a child.
Frederick Douglass also traveled out of the United States at times. Did that have any kind of an impact on how it was that he thought of the United States?
When he wrote his first book, The Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, he had to flee to Europe for 21 months because when he wrote his first book, he was a fugitive slave. One of the reasons why he wrote his book, because when Frederick Douglass started speaking, they thought he was an imposter because he was so articulate, they didn't think he was a slave, had been a slave. So Douglass said, okay, I'm going to write a book.
But he was self-taught. He was not provided the opportunity to go to a regular school.
You're exactly right. He was homeschooled self-taught, the way I call it. So he had to flee to Europe because in his book, he started mentioning names. He gave accounts of all the atrocities and murders he saw on the plantation, and he put a warrant out for his arrest. So he had to go to Europe for a while and kind of cool off for 21 months.
Now, how did he eventually get his freedom?
His friends in Europe, while he was in Europe, they purchased his freedom. So when he came back to the United States, he was a free man.
And he didn't have that so-called chain hanging over him.
Yes. He said that his experience, because he traveled Europe, he went to Scotland and Ireland and, of course, the United Kingdom. And he said while there, traveling and talking to people, a great transformation came within him. So he came back as a different person in terms of his views on some things. And one of those things, the Three-Fifth Clause.
That's one of the things. I mean, I'm an American citizen, not born here, but raised here from a young age. And it really amazes me that we just are not educated on the meaning of Frederick Douglass and how important he was to our history. And then there's also a point of view that when they, for lack of another word, the black community talks about our Constitution and they refer to how it was the numbers were counted, that three-fifths is looked at in an exceptionally negative format, and yet Frederick Douglass looked at it from a different point of view. I wonder if you could talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's very good. I'm a graduate of a historical black college. I was taught that the Founding Fathers gave us slavery in the Constitution because of the Three-Fifth Clause saying that blacks were three-fifths of a human being. And Frederick Douglass is key because in 1861 in Glasgow, Scotland, he's the one who gave clarity to the Three-Fifth Clause. And wait a minute, Douglass said, wait a minute. First of all, he said the Constitution is not a pro-slavery document. It's an anti-slavery document. And he went on to say that the Three-Fifth Clause has nothing to do with to say blacks are three-fifths of a human being. But it was actually a compromise reached by the northern free states and the northern slave states, which really limited the congressional power of the slave states. What the northern free states did, they said, okay, you want to count every black person in slavery as one person, one vote. We're not going to let you do that. But if you free them, we'll let you count them one person, one vote. The southern states did not want to free them. So the northern states said to the slave states, we'll let you count the slave population. Then that's three-fifths of a vote. And it was Frederick Douglass that gave that clarity. That's why it's important. You don't see too much about Douglass in history because Douglass affirms the Founding Fathers and he affirms the Constitution. That's why Douglass is not being taught. That's why there's never been a movie on a Frederick Douglass.
And I still have this question lingering. Why do you think it is then that this aspect of this extremely important historical figure in black history, and excuse me, that's not black history, that's our history.
Yes.
Why is that being left out?
Because Douglass was the quintessential constitutional conservative.
Gee, I guess he would have been a Republican, I think.
He would be a Republican. I don't think Douglass would be pleased with the current Republican Party, but Douglass is the kind of person, he'll be active politically, trying to get the Republican Party back to where we were defenders of the Constitution. So he'll be there actively helping the Republican Party to recapture its political distinction.
Now, he would have shared also commonality with Martin Luther King, then?
Most definitely. Dr. King, Frederick Douglass is the father of the Civil Rights Movement. Dr. King is the son of the Civil Rights Movement. Dr. King got many of his ideas and strategies from the writings of Frederick Douglass, especially regarding the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, I like that. That's an interesting parallel there. In conjunction with that, just moving on just a smidge enough to bring us back into today, being that this is not being taught, our current educational system with respect to what's going on, it's almost impossible to understand how it is that we can be providing education to our children. Being that we have an educational system that is everybody, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, they're all talking about how important education is. And one of the things that is talked about today is that we have black history. We don't have white history. Well, of course you don't have white history because of the very fact that history is everyone's. But black history isn't teaching these things. What I'm trying to get out of you is what is it within our society, whether it's the black segment of society, that is preventing from this being taught?
I think it's a little bit more higher than that. I think for the past 50 years, there's been a revision of history. The liberals, the socialists, they control the school system. They control the books, and they've taken, for example, Frederick Douglass out of these books. If you talk to young people today and you ask them about Frederick Douglass, they recognize the name, but they'll tell you they think he's a poet. Because in the American literature class, they analyzes his first book that he wrote, The Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass. So we have a challenge on our hand because what's happening, our children are not getting educated. I think they get indoctrinated into this socialist philosophy. And any example of how to or someone like Douglass who would refute the techniques of oppression used by socialists. It was Frederick Douglass. Because the techniques of oppression used by the master to keep Douglass a slave is identical to the techniques of oppression used by socialist governments, tyrants, to keep all American slaves.
This kind of draws us to Walter Williams, a economist and also a spokesman that just happens to be black, because I think Walter Williams is multicolored from the way he approaches studying American history and economics. But he recently wrote an article called Black Education. And in the article, he pointed out that this abysmal situation for black students in America today, and forcefully made his point that we can't blame the totality of the educational problem on the system, which is what we talked about just before,
yeah,
but also in itself that there needs to be a behavioral change in the black community. Do you agree with this statement by Walter Williams and his analysis? And if so, how do you think we can implement this change that we really need to have in our educational system,
I agree
especially
with
for blacks?
It starts at home. It starts at home. We have to inspire our children to value the purpose of an education. And again, to me, you got to go back to Douglass with that. You know, when you look at Douglass's life, Douglass escaped from slavery in 1838. Before he escaped from slavery, he knew how to read and write. As a matter of fact, he knew how to read first, but he delayed his escape from slavery a year until he mastered the ability to write as well as read. Because he realized that once I escape from slavery, if I can't read and write, no matter where I go, I'm going to be a slave there. And that's pretty important because 90% of black Americans during that time cannot read and write. Douglass knew the value of maximizing education opportunities. So while he was on slave master entitlement, so to speak, he mastered the ability to read and write. And that's key. We have to give that spirit and that motivation to our young folks to want to understand, have to understand that education is precious, and that's the key to freedom.
How do we do that? Because if you take a look at the data with respect to graduation rates and rates of amounts of knowledge that kids are supposed to have, especially on standardized testing, sadly, it has to be said that blacks are far and away way below the standard, and their graduation rates are very low. I mean, we're talking about children now that have gone through this system that were in a failure mode, and now they're having children. How do we bring this back?
What I've seen that has worked, we have to give them example of how an education has benefited a person to rise to greatness. Then again, I'm going to point to Frederick Douglass, a man who was born below poverty and became prosperous, a man who started off as a slave, ended up being a statesman and an advisor to five U.S. presidents. And I got a trivia question for you. Frederick Douglass passed away in 1895 as a result of a heart attack. He was 77 years old. How much money do you think he had amassed in savings at the time of his death?
Well, I kind of know about that one because I've been doing some research. He wasn't a poor man. He was a saver.
Yes.
He should be a role model for all of
That's
our
right.
young people.
That's right. $300,000 in
that
savings.
Age, in that date, that money, if converted in today's amount,
would $25 million today.
Right.
He believed in financial stewardship. And he is the key because no one today is beginning or starting their life off worse than what Douglass did. So the question is, what did he value? What was his action plan for success that led him to be an advisor to five U.S. presidents? $300,000 in the bank. Success is not a secret. Success is a system. Let's repeat the process.
Well, I tell you what, I think he'd have a problem with his action plan and some of the folks that we have today that are so-called spokesmen of the black community. And I kind of relate quickly to, say, Reverend Al and Reverend Jackson. I think one of your associates who is C.L. Bryant points out and makes a statement, and he's very direct in his statement, where he calls these guys race hustlers, that they are preaching a story to the black community that is almost completely divergent to that which would be given by Frederick Douglass if he were here today.
Just as far the North is from the South, that's all for Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton is from a Frederick Douglass. Nowhere close. The father of the civil rights movement. When I listen to them talk, I listen very intently. Apparently, they never studied Frederick Douglass. Al Sharpton, for example, was on Hannity's show 4 months ago. And Al Sharpton was making the case that the founding fathers gave us slavery in the Constitution because of the 3/5 clause.
We talked about that. I mean, that's a lie.
1861, Douglass clears it up. And one thing I would say this, now I don't know their intent, but I see the methods of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson in terms of how to deal with race relations in the United States. The way they're dealing with race relations in the United States is far different from what Douglas dealt with. When it comes to racial relations or racial healing or racism, Douglas did three things. He faced it, he fought it, and he fixed it. And the way Douglas fixed racism, he did it by interacting and impacting. When you interact and impact, you raise the level of morality of people around you. That's what he did. For example, Jackie Robinson, first man to break the color barrier in Major League Baseball. How did he do it? Even though they call him the N-word, they spat in his face. He didn't go in by insulting and instigating. He interacted and impacted in the level of morality of people around him rose. Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, they're fighting racism. Okay, they're not fixing it. Instead of fixing it, they're finger pointing by insulting and instigating. When you insult and instigate, you promote more racial hatred. And let's be honest, the racism that exists in the United States today, it is pale in comparison to the racism that Douglas dealt with. So what I've learned from studying Douglas is this. The proper focus is not to ask if someone or if an organization is racist or not. The proper focus is, what are we doing to interact and impact to make a difference? That's how you promote racial healing.
Which brings me to then, why isn't the black community able to realize what's going on? Because these people are their spokesmen. If you think about it, I mean, anytime there's a situation, whether it's somewhere down in Florida or up with the teachers going on strike up north, the so-called leaders are always there, but the black community just doesn't seem to understand why, you know, that they're doing this to them.
Well, first of all, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, they are self-appointed leaders. We've never had a voting or election in the black community where we decide who our leaders are. And I guarantee you, what I'm seeing happening in the black community, it wouldn't be Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton. So they're self-appointed. And so what's happening, in my view, they're leading folks astray. For example, they want black Americans to always see themselves as victims. When you see yourself as a victim, then you're going to depend on somebody else, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, to go get it for you. But when you see yourself as more than a conqueror, you'll create the means, develop yourself, improve yourself like a Frederick Douglass to go get it for yourself.
Well, it stands me to say, if we take this parallel and bring it into present day, the person that we have sitting in the White House, who I originally thought in the 2008 election would finally put to rest America's racism, it seems to me, and it's just my opinion, but it seems that that racism is being highlighted and heightened on a daily basis. And if you look at the numbers as far as what voting goes for, in the last election, President Obama received 95% of the black vote. What can we do and what can you do through this organization to maybe change or garner a larger role as far as blacks in the Republican Party in voting for something that is not quite what it seems to be?
The answer is simple, and I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to let modesty prevent me from saying this. God has given me the answer on how we can save this nation, change the political culture in this nation. And as simple as this, it does not matter which political party you are in. That does not matter. Let's take that off the table. It doesn't matter. What matters most is this. The way in which you vote, does it show your love and your faithfulness to the God that you say you are serving? The way in which we vote should be a reflection of the values we possess. That's the question. I know that so is true because that's what I used to do. I was not voting my values. I had more allegiance to the Democrat Party than I did to Jehovah God. Had they put the donkey on the ticket, I would have voted for the donkey. That's a sad acknowledgement, but that's what I was doing.
I'm so glad you saw the light, so to speak.
Let me tell you what changed my life. What woke me up was, this is a spiritual awakening for me. It was 2 Corinthians 13:5. If you read 2 Corinthians 13:5 in the Message translation, it states this: examine yourself to make sure you are solid in the faith. Don't drift alone taking things for granted. You need firsthand evidence, not mere hearsay, that Jesus Christ is in you. If you fail the test, do something about it. Well, 16 years ago, I failed that test. And when I examined myself, and I went through 3 days of solid depression because of it, I didn't realize that through my vote, I was actually spitting in my God's face through my vote. I wouldn't do it intentionally. I mean, I was voting for a party that wants to take God's divine definition of marriage and change it. I don't believe in it, but I was voting that way. And God diagnosed me that night and told me I was a political schizophrenic. I was politically crazy. I had been brainwashed and didn't know it.
You know, that's kind of interesting because being a Christian also, I don't think it really matters, but there are some seminal things within the black community. If you look back and read the history of how blacks developed, they were so strong in their faith. They were so strong in their churches. They were so strong in their family structure. First of all children would be wanted, but they would not be out of wedlock. And yet today, we've done a complete reversal and flip-flop. Now, it's not the fault of the black family because those social service programs that we ended up promulgating after the 1964 legislation with Lyndon Baines Johnson turned around that we don't have fathers in the house.
That's right. That's right. And You said a mouthful right there. I don't know where to dive in, but you said so many things that's very profound and I like to address. But one thing that's come to my mind right now for your listening audience to do in terms of Lyndon B. Johnson, get on your computer, Google Lyndon B. Johnson and his commencement speech to the graduates of Howard University. Howard is a historical black college. LBJ gave a commencement speech. And in that commencement speech now, he's talking to these individuals, ladies and young men, who just finished the rigors of academic challenge. He said, you can't do it by yourself. You need the government to take care of you.
That's so sad.
That's the opposite of a Frederick Douglass. When blacks were technically free from slavery, they asked Douglass, quote, what shall we do with the Negro? Douglass said, leave him alone. He said, you've done enough. You made him a slave. Leave him alone. He said, be fair, but no favor. Fair, but no favor. Then the God inside him will help him arise. Douglass said, quote, your interference, in other words, your programs where you want to help him is causing him positive injury.
That's why I think back to the 50s when I went to school, one of the smartest kids in my class was the black kid.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we didn't call them blacks. It was colored then. But we didn't up north. It was a little bit different situation. But then I think back on all these programs, especially starting with Lyndon Baines Johnson's. From that time to now, we've spent over $15 trillion, whether it be the federal government, the state, or local, on various types of programs. And yet we still have poverty today. And it's not poverty just blacks, but it's poverty in whites. And yet neither those whites or blacks are realizing why it is that poverty is occurring around them, that they are buying into a system which does not allow them to advance.
There's a quote. I mean, I watch the Western Channel a lot, and I saw this Western, and his father was talking to his son. And it's so true what I see happening in my community. He said, if you allow someone to do the things for you that you should be doing for yourself, pretty soon they're going to think they're better than you are. So that's what's happening. We allow people to do some things for us we should be doing for ourselves. I don't want someone to take care of me. I'm not a victim. I'm more than a conqueror. And that's the problem I have with liberals. They want to take care of me. I don't want you to take care of me. Get out of my way. I have a God.
Why then is it that especially in the black community, I mean, my last place of residence was Chicago. And if you drive around Chicago, man, that's all you see is churches here, churches there. And the church is so strong in the black community, and yet when you look at what's going on in the black family, it's almost the opposite of what should be going on.
Well, blacks are theologically conservative, and we're some of the most conservative folks you have met in your life. The separation is this. We're not voting our values. We are not voting our values. And that's the bottom line. When it comes to going to the poll, we're not voting our values. When you do that, you're going to create some havoc in your family and in your community. Because you're not voting your values. You're spitting in God's face based on your vote. And what has to happen is there must be a self-examination process that has to take place between individuals and the God they serve. We're not trying to convert people to conservatism. I'm not. I'm just trying to help folks realize you're already one. You just don't know it.
How then do you explain, Reverend Wright, in the black theology movement?
Well, the black theology movement, when you really, and I'm not an expert on this. My brother's more of an expert on this than I am. But he shared to me this. The black theology movement really came from Frederick Douglass. The black theology movement is, the premise is that we must be suspicious of white Christianity. Because it was white Christianity that came up and said that blacks are inferior because of Noah's curse on the children of Ham. That we got to, and Douglass said, we got to be suspicious with this. For example, the slave master used the Bible to justify slavery. Douglass came back and used the Bible to end slavery. Douglass had an essence of black theology. His interpretation of the Bible was different from his Christian slave master. But Douglass used the Constitution, the Bible, and the free market philosophy to create his posterity. What Cone did, Cone went on a Marxist bend. He went from capitalism to socialism. Now we look at the government as our source. as our God. Well, Douglas said, no, you discover your God-given gifts and talents, you create opportunity for yourself. So that's the split of this black theology. I'm a black theologist, but I'm in line with Douglas' black theology.
So how then can you, through the Frederick Douglass Republicans, the organization and the movement that you have, how do we get this change to occur? How do we get them to understand how their value structure has been changed around?
I've been doing this for 3 years now. I've been taking this Frederick Douglass Liberty Messenger message across the country, and I go in the minority communities. When I carry this Frederick Douglass Liberty Messenger message to black churches, I have a 90% success rate of taking minority values, which are conservative, and turning them into conservative votes. And what I realize is this, there's a three-legged stool here. You got to have a message, number one, that's non-condescending. Can't talk down to folks. Number two and number three, you must have a message that's able to change the heart and change the mind. And the way you do that, the way you touch them emotionally, that's Frederick Douglass. That's an emotional, inspirational story, not just for black Americans, but also for white Americans, also for Hispanic Americans, because that's an American dream story. So what we've been doing now for the past 2-3 years, I've been preaching to the choir. I'm actually traveling the major nine swing states now. I'm preaching to the conservative base.
Are you not to interrupt, but sure. I'm curious. Are you finding an acceptance from the black ministers and at these churches, or is there something being held back to say, well, wait a minute, no, that's not what we've been preaching
When we sit down with the black preachers in advance before, because we're not going to go in and talk to that congregation without talking to the preachers first.
Absolutely.
So when we sit down with the black preachers and we share this Frederick Douglass message, it resonates with them, and they realize how they have been misled. And then they allow us to come and do a workshop on the book that my brother and I put together. But my point I was making earlier is I've been preaching to the choir. I've been traveling the country. I'm working with Tea Party groups, 9-12 groups, conservative groups, the base, the choir. And we're preaching to the choir because the choir needs to be energized. The choir needs to be equipped. The choir needs to be trained how to go out and bring in new choir members. The choir needs to be taught how to sing a new song. And that's the Frederick Douglass Liberty Messenger message. And with this discipleship now we got an army, if you will, of Frederick Douglass Liberty Messengers who are going out there and do the things we're doing with success. And it's not about color. It's about values. Anybody can become a Frederick Douglass Liberty Messenger if you believe in the four life-empowering values of Douglass. Respect for the Constitution, respect for life, the belief in limited government. I like to keep more than money that I make, and the belief in personal responsibility. If you believe in those four life-empowering values, then you are a Frederick Douglass Liberty Messenger. So what has happened with this Frederick Douglass Liberty Messenger message or melody, we're the offensive strategy for the Tea Party movement. You can't play the race card on the Frederick Douglass Liberty Messenger. It doesn't work.
I don't think the Tea Party is going to have a problem with you at all. I think they'll be welcoming you as fact.
Now, if you go back and look at President Obama's State of Union address, not this recent one, 2 years ago, he made a statement that I recall vividly. He said, America does not want a smaller government. They want a more efficient government. And that bothers me because as a student of Frederick Douglass, I can't imagine Frederick Douglass going to his slave master and say, I want you to be more efficient. No, Douglass said, I want you to have less power so I can have more rights. And that's what we're dealing with. The federal government has power. We're supposed to have rights. Douglass said, I'm out of here.
One of the other things that is prominent today in the world, in the news, in what's going on, is this level of Islamic growth in the world. But one of the things that's been growing in our prisons is the number of blacks that are converting to Islam. I don't think it's the numbers are as high in the community at large, but in the prisons especially. What is this draw? I mean, it's almost like totally opposite of what we normally believe in, and yet the Islam is making such inroads in the black community. How is that happening, and do you see some way that your movement could shape or change that?
Again, the answer is Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass was an ordained minister, and you're right. This has been going on for years. You know, Malcolm X was introduced to that particular religion when he was in prison, and they're in the prisons. And so, but you have to have a message where they don't see God as being just a white man. Okay, that's one of the things that happens a lot. But Frederick Douglass is the answer for this. Frederick Douglass' introduction to Christianity was not a good one. He said the worst and the most barbaric masters that he had were Christians. But even through that experience, Douglass became an ordained AME Zion Christian minister.
Frederick Douglass
is the answer to save this nation.
That's a catchword that should be heard and spoken much, much more often. Before we finish up, I'd like to also have you speak to the documentary movie that's going to be coming out called The Runaway Slave. I understand that you're involved and associated with some of the people that were involved with this movie. If you could maybe give them a plug.
I'm blessed to have the invitation from C.L. Bryant to be part of the Runaway Slave documentary. So I'm in there to help educate and equip the choir, because when you go to the theater and you see this documentary, you're not going to find too many black Americans there. You're going to see the choir members are there, the conservative base. And so I think it's a good opportunity to go and learn and be educated in what the Runaway Slave documentary is going to put forth. But the next step in the process is once you get this information, you then must be able to go to talk to your family members.
Pass it on.
How do you do that? You do it through the Frederick Douglass Liberty Messenger methodology, and that's what it's all about. That's where my organization comes in, and we help conservatives how to create an atmosphere for political dialogue without the fear of being accused of being a racist or a sellout. I'm here to tell you, this Frederick Douglass message is so bulletproof, it trumps the race card. You cannot call a Frederick Douglass Liberty Messenger a racist or a sellout. It doesn't work. It absolutely doesn't work. And I'm here to tell you, once the Frederick Douglass Liberty Messenger message gets on a national level, you will see liberals start leaping out of windows. They don't have an answer for this.
You know, I think we need T-shirts with Frederick Douglass on there instead of Che Guevara. Oh, and we have one here.
We have one, and it's a T-shirt that says three big bold letters, FDR, it's not who you think, Frederick Douglass Republican.
Could you give us the websites for your organization and for the movie, The Runaway Slave?
Yeah, for The Runaway Slave, it's runawayslavemovie.com. That's runawayslavemovie.com. And for my organization, Frederick Douglass Republican, no S on the word Republican. Douglass spelled his last name with two S's, by the way. So it's frederickdouglassrepublican.com or .org, or you can get there by going to conservativemessenger.com or .org.
Okay, Carl Smith, I'd like to thank you so much for coming on my show today. I would also like to point out that any American citizen is welcome to come on a future episode of America Speaks Out and express their opinions and ideas about today's topics. The FlyPod Network is a neutral forum, so regardless of your point of view or your political affiliation, it makes no difference to us. If you'd like to come on our show, contact us by email right here in the studio, shout@theflypod.com. Well, that's my show for today. From Studio 7, I'm your host, Alex Parnuk, coming to you free and clear through the New Media Network program feeds of www.theflypod.com. Until next time, thank you for listening, and so long.